dus niet massaal.
Star Wars Definition.
3, 4.
Hi, this is Glenn from Infants on Thrones. You know, the nice one. So I want to do three things here today. First, I want to tell you a little bit about what the infants are planning for Sunstone, which is just over a month away now. Second, you know how at the beginning of our last podcast with John DeLynn, we said, all right, this is a clean copy? Well, I have a clip or two from the unclean copy. You want to hear it? Sounds pretty juicy, huh? You'll see what I mean at the end of today's intro. And then thirdly, I've listened back to that John DeLynn atheist discussion a few times now, and there were some candid thoughts that I had as I was listening to it on my drive to work the other day, and I recorded it on my phone, and I thought, oh, I'll share that. Take it or leave it. Because mainly, this is all to tell you about what's going on with Sunstone. And then if there's other things, maybe it'll be interesting, maybe it won't. So,
Sunstone.
It looks like Lindsay has put together a pretty amazing lineup for Sunstone this year. Now, you can go to the Sunstone website and read all about it. It's the last week of July, starting that Thursday. I think it's the 28th. And it's at the University of Utah campus in Salt Lake City. And we infants, we're going to be around for pretty much all of it, because in addition to our presentations, which I'll talk about in a minute, we're going to have a booth set up where you can stop by and say hello to us if you want to. And we're going to be selling T-shirts. Because nothing would make us happier than to see a bunch of people wearing these really cool Infants on Thrones T-shirts at Sunstone. Now, the proceeds will go towards our hosting fees and making sure that all of our past and future episodes stay available and free to download on the internet long after we all call it quits, whenever that may be. We'll have more information about the T-shirts coming up on our website in the next week or two, but honestly, we're still trying to figure out how many we're going to need to make and bring and in what sizes, etc., and how to plan all of that in advance. You know, maybe we need to set up a PayPal account or something like that so that you can pre-purchase them and then pick them up at Sunstone, and then we'll have others available to sell. So if any of you have any ideas for that, send us an email. Let us know how we can do this, because we've never tried anything like this before. Now, ultimately, we'll also make these T-shirts available to those of you who won't be able to attend Sunstone, but we're going to need to figure out how to do that too. So first, we're going to start with those who will be coming to Sunstone and can pick them up and wear them there, and then we'll make them available to the rest of you after that. So again, check our website over the next week or two for more details. You'll see that soon. Presentations. Now, as for the presentations at Sunstone, all the infant presentations will be on Saturday, July 30th in the East Ballroom. So from 9 to 10 a.m., you have John Hamer, and the title of his presentation is Mapping Many Mormonisms. Maybe I should let you know that the theme of Sunstone this year is Many Mormonisms. It's something like that. So on theme, John's presenting Mapping Many Mormonisms. Then the next presentation from 10:15 to 11:15, that will be me, Glenn Ostlund, from Lost Tribes to Mormon Humor, and I'm going to talk about my experience as a graduate student and kind of some of the steps that happened along my slow burn of untangling my beliefs from the church and looking at it from a scholarly perspective. And so that will be my presentation. Then after that, from 11:30 to 12:30, will be Matt Long, Mormon Spotlight, The Problem of Child Sex Abuse in the LDS Church. And he'll be doing that with a group that he's working with that focuses on these issues. Now, from 12:30 to 2 p.m., also in the East Ballroom, there's really nothing going on, but we're going to have lunch there. So we're going to invite anybody who wants to join us just to come and have a little informal snack down. An infant snack down, get it? Because it's lunch.
All girls just wanna have lunch.
Now, you'll have to bring your own food. We're not providing food for you, but there will be places to purchase food at Sunstone, and we'll be in the East Ballroom, so if you want to come and chat, just hang out. We'll be there for an infant snack down. Then, the main event, the infant panel discussion will be from 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., and that is titled Many Infants on Multiple Thrones, What We Do, Why We Do It, and How We Think It Matters. And we'll be doing audience participation, interactive thing. We're also hoping that we can do something with a live broadcast. We're not quite sure about that, but it's something that we're hoping to do. So we'll let you know more about that as we get closer to the event. So those of you, again, who can't attend Sunstone can still listen live or maybe watch live or at least participate live. So we'll let you know as that progresses. Now, Jake will also be doing a presentation from 3:45 to 4:45. This is not going to be in the same room. This is going to be in the West Ballroom, which I think is right next door to the East Ballroom. And that is titled Text Mining, 30-plus Years of Sunstone Talks, presented by Jake Frost and Jake Spurlock. Now, Jake will also be hosting a lunch the day before this on Friday, July 29th. It'll be Brother Jake Does Sunstone in the Saltaire Room. And I think he's planning on showing Brother Jake videos. If it's like last year, he'll also debut maybe a new Brother Jake video or some other kind of treat that he's put together. So that'll happen on Friday. Now, one thing I need to say about the East Ballroom, where most of these presentations will be held, the room only holds about 125 to 150 people, so you need to get there early or be square surely. Whatever. So, again, we'll try to broadcast live if we're able to figure out how to do that. And you may have seen on Facebook, Tom posted the other day that we're testing out different software to do live broadcasts. So we'll continue to do that over the next few weeks, and we'll post it on Facebook where if anybody wants to watch our failed attempts, which last week we did it the other night, it was, I don't think it really worked, but we're trying it out, so keep watch for that if that's something that you're interested in. Well, that's pretty much it for our Sunstone promo. There'll be more information as we get closer, but again, we're just about a month away. So if you need to make plans to be there, all of the infants will be there, except, sadly, Randy will not be able to attend, Bob will not be able to attend, and Heather is a maybe at this point. But other than that, the rest of the infants will all be there. So we hope to see you too. And now, for those other clips that I promised you, if anyone is still awake.
Double blind.
No, you're... see, I thought that's why women are lesbians. Isn't that the...
Yeah, they're done with men. They hate men.
Man-hater.
Right. Isn't that right, Heather?
Is that why I'm a lesbian?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
Why are you asking?
Because she's a woman and she knows all things about women.
I have a question along those lines. It's something I'd like to ask all of you and get a response, but I want Heather's to be last because it'll be the right answer. So, let's say for example that you get like an ingrown pimple on the inside of your nose,
oof,
and in the night it pops, and there's some blood on your pillowcase in the morning when you wake up. What do you do, Matt? I want to start with you.
What
do you do when you wake up in the morning and there's blood on your pillowcase from an ingrown zit inside of your nose that popped? What do you do?
I take the pillowcase off.
And
wash it. Well, I soak it, probably either put hydrogen peroxide on it to clear the
blood.
Okay,
Matt, I don't want to ask you. Randy, what would you do?
What would I do? Nothing.
What would you do? You wouldn't do anything? You would just leave it there?
Yeah, and I'd turn the pillow over.
John, what would you do?
Cold water on blood. So I'd soak it in cold water and then wash it in the washer.
Okay. And Heather, what's the right answer?
I don't know. OxyClean?
OxyClean.
See, I should not have started with Matt because I think Matt's was the right answer. I was really proud of myself because this morning when I woke up and there was blood on my pillowcase, I took the pillowcase off and I put it in the dirty laundry basket. That wasn't good enough.
Yeah, Chris explained what you're supposed to do.
That's not what I said.
Yeah, I know. John was good. I think I'm one step up from Randy, who just flips the pillow over.
Blood stains if you don't get it out with the same with grape juice. blood and grape juice, you got to deal with especially.
I don't give two shits about a stain on my pillowcase.
Right. I know. But like for me, it's the like, no, I'm not. I don't get my advanced feminist degree. You know, it's like I put it in the dirty laundry for Krista to clean up. It's like, no, Matt's got the right idea. John's got the right idea. You take it. You clean it. I've still got some learning to do. That's the point I wanted to make.
I would recommend the hydrogen peroxide with blood. It works really, really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds
I'll
right.
do that as soon as we're done tonight. Yeah.
Well, I'm just happy that your ingrown zit and your nose popped.
Oh, my gosh. They're the worst.
That's disgusting.
They are the worst. Oh.
They really are the worst. So now you see why John insisted on having a clean recording, because he didn't want any of that nose zit popping stuff to, you know, sully his good name on a podcast with Infants on Thrones. It's risky enough for him coming on as it is. But so I just wanted to let you know it didn't really have anything to do with Kate Kelly. And now for a recording that I did all by myself, kind of like what I'm doing right now, except I was in the car driving and I was thinking about things that I would want to say and making a minisode. But you see what I'm saying when I'm kind of getting burned out on this stuff? Like, I'm not going through all of the steps that it would take to make it a really polished minisode like I was thinking. I'm like, I've got this raw material. I'll just use it. I'll just throw it out there, whatever it is. So, you know, you got to take it or leave it, whatever it is. So these were things that I was thinking as I was listening to the discussion about atheism, and especially I think it was when John talked about his daughter that had decided that it was better to believe in God than be miserable and suicidal. You know, I mean, that's just him. But so these were some of my thoughts in response to that and some of the other things from that discussion. If you haven't heard it, I don't know. I thought it was a really good discussion. So go back and listen to it. John DeLynn, The Reluctant Atheist. And I've just got to say, you know, for people who can be critical of the tangents that we go on when we're talking and there's four or five or six of us, it's a little creepy listening back to myself, talking to myself as I'm driving to work, all the tangents that I go on and, you know, bringing up arguments and counterpositions and nothing about it from this way. I don't know. It's kind of hard to hear. It's not the best audio quality. The train of thought might be interesting to follow. It might be something that you just say, I'm not going to do this. But I don't know. I kind of find it interesting listening to this raw thing, not as any kind of a regular thing that I would do. But I don't know. I kind of like it. So here you go. Here are my ramblings.
All right, so I want to respond a little bit as to, first, what I mean when I say that I don't want my kids, or that I want my dad to not be in the church, you know. I don't want to take away anything that's special to them. You know, John was talking about the child that would rather believe in God than commit suicide. Well, yeah. But... So if we draw an analogy here, and you think about your kids that go to school, and they're in a classroom with other kids, and a lot of times the kids come home with a cold or the flu, you know, some kind of sickness that they caught at school, right? If you know that this school or this particular classroom or whatever it is has a high probability to get them sick, you're going to take precautions to make sure that they don't get sick. And if there are other alternatives to, you know, places to go to school that are less likely to get sick, you know, or with different diseases, you put them there, right? So I just feel with Mormonism that I've come to this point. Oh, and the other thing on that John analogy is the responsibility. You know, the reason that the child is believing in God in the first place and feeling the comfort that comes from belief in God is because, as a parent, that's what you've taught them. That's what they've been exposed to as a child. That's how you've taught them to find comfort. And so I think as a parent, you've got to take some responsibility for that. And once you recognize that there's actually some harm in what you've done, you need to take an active position to reverse that. Now, you got to be smart about it. You can't just, you know, flip a switch and boom, it's over. I think what I hear from John is concern that you can't push people because then they resist it. So you got to be careful with it. But he also mentioned that his daughter now is in a different place than she was when she was feeling that she's, you know, suicidal. So if, you know, another analogy you could draw is heroin. You know, if you've got somebody who's been using opiates their whole life, or they're taking heroin, whatever it is, and they just, I'd rather have the heroin, or I'd rather commit suicide than not have the heroin. You know, if, yeah, maybe you keep giving them the heroin a little bit to keep them alive, but you want to wean them off of it so they don't need that anymore. And also recognize that the reason they're there in the first place is because you were putting opiates in their milk, in their baby milk, in their formula, and then little Gerber heroin stuff. So that's my thought there. As far as, like, what are these actual, you know, because I'm drawing these analogies here that are pretty extreme and bombastic, heroin and you know, disease and things. And, you know, I look at Mormonism and say, hey, they're driving my father to the airport. They're doing these good things. There's value that it provides in people's lives. So what actually is the harm? What's the damage here? So we've talked about the gender issues a little bit. I think that one of the most insidious things about this is that the women that are in these positions have been conditioned to accept it, and they don't even see it. They don't recognize it most of the time. And they're comfortable with the patriarchy in this system where they're surrendering their power. They're surrendering their voice. You know, which I've had another separate thought recently about what is love, how do you define love, and you know, for me, one aspect of love is becoming vulnerable and surrendering power, you know, allowing myself, you know, putting myself into someone's hands where, you know, it's a risky situation. They could hurt me, and I'm lowering defenses and trusting and all of these things. So maybe, you know, the argument could be made that women who are accepting the patriarchy in Mormonism are surrendering this part of themselves as an expression of love. Okay, so that sounds like a noble thing, but is it? I don't know. I don't know if it is. I don't know. I do. I don't think it is. I just don't think that it is, because the claims of Mormonism aren't true. What happened? What is the biggest claim in Mormonism? The biggest benefit is that you will have not only salvation but exaltation. That's it. And you have a priesthood that performs these ordinances that are necessary for salvation, so that in the next life you will pass through the judgment bar and you will get to go to the celestial kingdom. You'll be with your family forever. You know, you will be able to receive of the atonement in its fullest. That's the big promise. And then, of course, there's also all these things about happiness during this life and staying out of addiction. And there's healthy things, having happy family relationships, serving other people, things like that that do bring happiness in this life. But the biggest claim in Mormonism, the truth claim, is that what you get in the afterlife and how it impacts your eternal progression. Now, maybe that's true. There's no way of knowing if that's true or not. I mean, it could be true, but are you really going to put all of your eggs into that basket? I'm not. I, you know, there was a time where I did, but there is a much higher probability, incredibly higher probability, that is not true. And when you look at how this story, how this narrative was created, and you say this is God's gospel, it comes from God. No, you can see the fingerprints of humanity all along the creation of this doctrine. And that's why when people say, oh, I've left the church because of historical issues, that, you know, it can be all dismissive. Well, that was then. That doesn't have any relevance on now. Well, no, it actually does, because you can see how things evolved and created, and you can see that it's man-made. And, you know, maybe you would have the argument that, well, God was leading people line by line, precept by precept, and, you know, fine, you can accept that if that's what you want to do. But I'm telling you, for me, at least, now I sound like John, it's just not a strong argument. And what do you have to do in order to be eligible for this blessing? If this blessing is real, what do you have to do? Well, you've got to give 10% of your income for your entire life. You have to devote not just that 10% of income, but also all the time that it takes, and commitment, and lifestyle, and the things that are actually enhance life's experience, like having a cup of coffee or drinking socially, you know, responsibly. Those things really do add enjoyment to life. Now, they're not necessary, but why sacrifice those? Why give those up for something if it's not actually the case that you get salvation and all of this? Now, I'm rambling. That's why I'm recording this right now, so that I can tie all these thoughts together. But so I want to get back to what the harm is in the church. What are these diseases? What's the opiate heroin quality? The insidious parts of the church. Gender is a big one. The gender issues, the views towards homosexuality, towards homosexual people, transgender people, just that judgment, the elitism that just comes to, as a result of feeling like you are the most chosen people on the face of the earth, and you know the right way to do things, that other people who are smoking a cigarette, you're going to just immediately judge them. People who have tattoos, you're going to immediately judge them. Multiple earrings, immediately judge them. Sleeveless shirts, immediately judge them. You know, you become so judgmental of other people, and I think that is very unhealthy. And probably the most insidious thing to me about accepting Mormonism and is that you really do sacrifice your intellectual rigor and intellectual integrity, and you have to accept things that scientifically are not true, whether it's the age of the earth or the way that it was created or Adam and Eve being the first people. You know, that there is this religious worldview that is incompatible with the secular worldview, and it retards your development. It halts your progress intellectually, and puts you at a disadvantage when it comes to actually making decisions. And that creates a vulnerability where you can be preyed upon by people who will abuse you in that situation. Now, not everybody's going to do that. But when you have people in positions of authority and you put yourself in a position that you're going to accept that authority over anything that you might come to reason out of your own mind, I think that's a dangerous situation, and I don't want my kids to be in that. I want them to have the tools to be able to reason things out for themselves, make decisions that they're comfortable and confident in, and not surrender that to anyone for any reason. And that's really the root of it. And that's where I get the most upset and animated is when the intellectual pursuits are villainized. And anyway, so that's something that I want to talk about. I want to put this into a mini-sode that's a response to the John DeLynn episode, and lay it out point by point and have it be kind of an essay that I do while at the same time announcing the Sunstone stuff. Well, that's hard to say. Sunstone stuff. Sunstone stuff. Sunstone. Whoa.
So there you go. Welcome inside the mind of Glenn. And thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.